It is gone! A two-run home run for Rhys Hoskins. Game over! Franco wins it!
He got it! He pulled it right out of the bushes!
Swing and a miss! He got him! And Aaron Nola leads two.
Swing and a miss! Struck him out!
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 294. I'm John Stolness from SB Nation's Phillies blog, The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. Coming up, we're going to recap the Phillies series against the Arizona Diamondbacks and look ahead to a big series down in Atlanta against the Braves, the team the Phillies are battling with for National League East supremacy. I'm going to talk to Hannah Kaiser, MLB writer for Yahoo Sports, and she also has a couple other projects that she's working on, and we'll talk to her about the Phillies, the National League East, and the National League as a whole. We'll go around the majors and talk a little trade deadline, some ideas that popped up into the old noggin, and actually got a little bit of an assist from someone on Twitter who had a really good idea about a potential trade target the Phillies could go after. And of course, we will preview the upcoming series against the Atlanta Braves. And we're going to talk some Scott Kingery, some Hector Neris, and time for Phillies fans to give Gabe Kapler credit on one specific thing, on one thing in particular that I think he deserves a little bit of kudos for here, and we'll do that coming up here in just a few minutes on Hittin' Season. But first, just a reminder, folks, to check out the Hittin' Season Patreon if you like the bonus content. Go to patreon.com/hittin'season, and we've got bonus video material, some written content, some extra podcasts up there if you want a little bit more than what you're getting from the Good Fight podcast feed. Again, it's at patreon.com/hittin'season, and don't forget to subscribe to the Good Fight podcast feed if you haven't done so already on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That way you get this podcast and continued success with Justin Clue and Liz Rocher and The Dirty Inning. There's a brand new Dirty Inning out this week, and it is hilarious. Let me just tell you, you have to listen to it for one thing, and really one thing only, hookworms. I'll just leave it at that. Make sure you check out Justin and Trevor Strunk on the latest The Dirty Inning. It is one of the most unique baseball podcasts you will ever hear, and you will laugh pretty much the entire time. It's absolutely hysterical. All right, let's get into this Diamondbacks series and recap. A series in which the Phillies lost 2 out of 3, their first home series loss since they lost a series to the Milwaukee Brewers a few weeks ago. The Phillies have just not been playing very consistent baseball. They lost 8 out of their last 13 now. They are 38-30 on the season, 8 games over .500. They just cannot seem to get themselves going. They're like an automobile with a bad starter. You know, they'll make it somewhat down the road. It looks like they'll be getting a little bit of momentum, and then, you know, the carburetor goes out. I mean, it looks like they just cannot get going, and it's really frustrating to watch a team with this many good players fail to be able to keep any kind of momentum going, to get any kind of consistency going. And it's really more the offense that we're talking about when we're talking about why this team can't get going, because obviously they've dealt with a lot of injuries in the bullpen. We know the limits of the starting rotation, but the offense was supposed to carry this team, and they're just not doing it. It seems like they have two or maybe three guys who are really hot at one time, and right now that's Jay Bruce and Scott Kingery. Rhys Hoskins is doing okay, but I wouldn't say he's been red hot. He had a couple of bloop hits that ended up going for some big RBIs in the series against the Reds and against the Diamondbacks. But, you know, he's not hitting the ball out of the ballpark. He has 3 home runs since May 20th. Bryce Harper certainly is not hitting the ball out of the ballpark. But the rest of Harper's numbers over the last few weeks are looking really good. And we'll get into some of those numbers here in just a minute. But the offense just cannot seem to get any more than 2 or 3 guys going. And then the other guys in the lineup who aren't going well are ice cold. Ice cold. And you can't score consistently using that recipe. The Phillies are also just not homering nearly enough, and they're giving up way too many homers. That was evident in the series opener on Monday, which we'll get to also in just a second. But let's talk about the game on Wednesday night, the fastest Phillies game of the season so far, 2 hours and 15 minutes, as Zach Eflin suffered a hard luck loss in this one. He went 8 innings, allowed just 2 runs on 5 hits. And in the inning in which he gave up the 2 runs, he gave up 3 bloop singles and a sacrifice fly. I mean, it was incredible. He just got BABIPed to death in that inning and ended up and on the losing end of a 2-0 score. Because some Arizona pitcher named Miller Kelly just baffled the Phillies. There's a 30-year-old rookie who has been pitching for the last 4 years in South Korea. Features a low 90s mile-an-hour fastball. He does not have stuff that's going to blow you away, and he made Phillies hitters look utterly ridiculous in this game. He went 7 2/3 shutout innings as the Phillies lost 2-0. They just got three hits in the game, didn't advance a runner to third base, and it completely wasted a brilliant effort by Eflin. And he is just so refreshing to watch pitch. I did not see this coming from Zach Eflin this season. He has so much command of everything right now with a 94-95 mile an hour fastball. He's putting the ball wherever he wants on both sides of the plate, elevating and then keeping the ball down when he wants to. It's amazing to see a pitcher with decent stuff who can command it. And it's the polar opposite. With Zach Eflin following Jake Arrieta in the rotation right now, the contrast between the two could not be more stark. Where Jake Arrieta's ball is moving all over the place, but he has absolutely no idea where it's going when it leaves his hand. I truly don't believe he has any idea where it's going when it leaves his hand. It might be 6 inches low and away. It might be right up down the middle of the plate and he was trying to get it in. You know, it just, there's a reason he's given up 14 home runs this season. It's because he can't control the baseball. He can't command the baseball. He's been giving up a ton of walks, too. Gave up 5 walks in the game on Tuesday that the Phillies actually ended up winning. But he was dancing through the raindrops the whole game. He gave up 3 runs in 6 innings, and the offense came through for them in the game on Tuesday, the lone game against the Diamondbacks that the Phillies would win. You just watch a guy like Arrieta, who is struggling with his command and has been since he joined the Phillies last year. And then Zach Eflin, who's just putting the ball where he wants. And I know it's not as easy as Zach Eflin made it look, but when you get ahead with a first pitch strike, you are in control. And Jake Arrieta does not get ahead of hitters. Zach Eflin has been getting ahead of hitters all season long. He's 8th among qualified major league starters in first pitch strike percentage. I mean, this is what a good pitcher does. And Zach Eflin has been the best pitcher in the rotation the entire season, lowered his ERA to 2.81. If you throw out a bad start that he had in Miami back in April, he has a 2.25 ERA in his other 12 starts this year, so he definitely deserves to be under All-Star consideration. But with the Phillies losing the finale, they, as I'm recording this, the Braves and Pirates are in a rain delay late in their game. So right now, the Phillies, as I'm talking about this, are half a game behind the Atlanta Braves. By the time this is all done, if the Braves end up beating the Pirates and sweeping that series, they will have won 7 games in a row and 9 of their last 11, I believe, and they will be in first place in the National League East. You will now have a second-place Philadelphia Phillies team, and it's deserved. I mean, the Braves, we'll get into the Braves here in just a second, but let's just chat for a few more minutes about the series against the Diamondbacks. I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself. Cesar Hernandez is ice cold right now, 5-for-49 over his last 13 games. Has a .229 on-base percentage out of the leadoff spot since replacing Andrew McCutchen at the top of the lineup. And Gabe Kapler was asked after the game if he's considering making any changes at the top of the lineup. And he said they're considering everything with the lineup. They'll consider that. One of the considerations is to move Scott Kingery up to the top of the order. I would not do that. I think Scott Kingery is doing great right where he is. If you take him up to the top of the order, it could change the way he goes about doing things. It could change his approach. He might start to try to look for more walks all of the time instead of being aggressive like he has been right now. And I think Scott Kingery, you need in this lineup somebody who can drive in some runs, because they're certainly not getting a lot of consistency out of a lot of different guys in the lineup. And so I do think getting a good leadoff hitter up at the top of the lineup is important. Roman Quinn might be back this weekend, and I would not be at all hesitant to put Roman Quinn at the top of the lineup and put Kingery back at third base to get Michael Franco out of the lineup and see if that doesn't help things out. But Cesar Hernandez is really struggling. As hot as he was in May, he is absolutely ice cold in June. He's not drawing any walks. He's not having long plate appearances. He got up in his third at bat in the game on Wednesday night. He was ahead 2-0 in the count and then swung and hit a weak ground ball to second base. I mean, it was just a non-competitive plate appearance by Cesar Hernandez. And so I certainly think you will probably see I think there's a real good chance you will see a different leadoff hitter when the lineup cards are introduced in Atlanta on Friday. Looking back at the game on Monday, what a crazy game. 13 home runs hit by both teams on Monday in the Diamondbacks win. 8 by Arizona, 5 by the Phillies, and Jared Eichhoff gave up 5 of the 8 home runs in his start for the Phillies. He has been since moved to the bullpen. He will not be making his next start on Sunday in Atlanta. He only gave up those 5 hits in that game, but they were all home runs, including back-to-back-to-back dingers to lead off the game. Really, as we're talking about this, if the Phillies do not make the playoffs this year, much of the blame will surely be on the long ball. Both the Phillies' inability to hit enough of them and the Phillies' pitchers are giving up way too many of them so far this season. Phillies hitters are 21st in home runs hit, and they have given up the 4th most home runs of any pitching staff in baseball, the most of any National League team. The other 3 teams in front of them are all American League teams, and the Phillies are on pace to shatter the record for the most home runs they've given up in a season. And one of the reasons why the team is not hitting a lot of home runs is that Bryce Harper is not hitting a lot of home runs. And Bryce Harper got the day off in the game, the series finale on Wednesday. He did not start because the team saw it as an opportunity to give him back-to-back days off, with the off day coming on Thursday as the Phillies get ready to take on to play a stretch of 17 straight games against division rivals. And there's not going to be an off day for, I think they'll have one off day in the middle of that. And Harper didn't sit because he has been struggling. He's been hitting he hit 301 with 4 homers and 19 RBIs, is an 873 OPS in his last 23 games. So he's been actually hitting pretty well lately. He just has one walk the last 2 weeks. If that's an incredible stat, given how much he was walking early in the season, but he has been a little bit more aggressive earlier in the count, and that seems to be the difference, is that he's trying to be a little bit more aggressive and hunt some early pitches to hit, and it seems to be working for him here so far with that 301 average over the last 23 games. And I know that Bryce Harper is not having the type of statistical season that one would expect someone who just signed a $330 million contract, but he is not having a bad season. It's been a fine season. That's how I would label Bryce Harper's 2019 so far. It's been fine. It's not the superstar season we were hoping for. He's hit fewer home runs than we expected. He has 11. And it's probably not an all-star season. He doesn't deserve to go to the All-Star game this year based on how he's played, but with his defense and base running, he is still 9th among National League outfielders in Fangraphs wins above replacement. So it's not a bad season he's having, but it's also not an All-Star season. It's been fine. It's been fine, and I think that's about as much as you can say about it. And I'm hoping that the day off does him a little bit of good. It's a good chance for him to just kind of get his legs under him as the Phillies are about to embark on a pretty brutal stretch of games against some big games against divisional opponents coming up here over the next few weeks. Gabe Kapler. Let's talk about Gabe for a second. Because I know when we talk about Gabe, it's usually to talk about something he did wrong, a relief pitcher that he left in too long, a starter that he pulled too early, a lineup decision that makes you scratch your head. But I think Gabe Kapler has done a good job this year. I think this team has some holes and some weaknesses that they're going to need to shore up at the trade deadline, and I think they will do it. But all in all, I think Gabe Kapler, I think the locker room likes him. I think he has pushed most of the right buttons this year. He has had some bad games, and I think he's had some bad weeks. But overall, I think Kapler has done a fine job as manager of the Phillies this year. And I think one of the things he deserves a lot of credit for is how he's handled Scott Kingery. They wanted to make him a super utility man, like Ben Zobrist. That's what they were looking to do with Scott Kingery, because with Cesar Hernandez at second base, Kingery's natural position, there wasn't a place for him to play there. So last year they played him at shortstop out of necessity, and it was bad. It was bad for a long time last year. Kingery couldn't hit last year to save his life. He was a far below replacement level player. But towards the end of the year, last month of the season, he started to finally look a little bit more comfortable at shortstop. He was still a mess at the plate, but defensively, at least, he wasn't killing you out there. And this year, I know there were a lot of naysayers when Kapler said in spring training that the third base job was going to be an open competition between Scott Kingery and Michael Franco. Franco ended up winning the job. Kingery was a guy coming off the bench and got off to a pretty hot start this year, making spot starts, and then went on the DL with a hamstring injury. But since he's come back, he has played center field a good majority of the time and also a lot of third base. And you can see the improvement game to game in center field with Scott Kingery defensively. And I think he's been just fine at third base despite questions about his throwing arm. He has been adequate to above adequate, probably about league average defensively at all of those different positions while adding a ton of value offensively. Kingery's emergence here as one of the young players to build around in this offense. I wasn't sure if anyone other than Rhys Hoskins was going to be that guy, and we are still very early in the season. We've seen enough of Scott Kingery to think that this can sustain itself, because he's walloping the ball. He's not getting away with cheap hits. He's walloping the baseball. And you could see Kingery at the top of the lineup to replace Cesar Hernandez at leadoff this weekend against the Braves. Again, I wouldn't put him there. But he has turned into the multi-position Ben Zobrist-like asset that the Phillies were hoping he'd be. He's being more aggressive early in counts. And I think he's talked about just being more confident. And when we look for statistical reasons, we look for intellectual and logical reasons why a player might make the leap from one season to the next. Sometimes it just has to do with a player being more confident in themselves. That seems to be the case with Scott Kingery, that he's just not freaking out at the plate anymore. He seems to have a plan. He's not swinging at as many pitches out of the strike zone. When he's got a ball 6 inches off the plate, he's letting it go. He's not chasing. He's waiting for pitchers to come into the zone and challenge him. And when they do, he's not missing. He's killing the ball for extra base hits. He's batting .315, .356, .613 on the season with an OPS plus of 150 and 7 home runs this year. I mean, he just in the game on Tuesday when he hit another home run and had a couple extra base hits, he had an average over .320 with a .360 on base and a .600 slugging percentage. Only Cody Bellinger, Christian Yelich, Josh Bell, and Austin Meadows have a slash line like that this year. Now, he's dropped below some of those numbers in batting average and on base, but just a hair. But just a hair. He has been a lifesaver in this lineup, taking over for Odubel Herrera in center field some nights and for Michael Franco at third base. And Franco is largely useless. I mean, and once Roman Quinn comes back, I'd like to see Quinn back out in center field, if for no other reason than you get a plus-plus defensive player out there and put Kingery back at third base and do that most of the time. I think that's probably what you'll see. And it's really helped out. Scott Kingery has been great. And Jay Bruce for MVP. I mean, what a trade. What a time for the trade to happen. When the Phillies made the trade, they didn't know that McCutchen was going to be out for the season with an injury. And the Mariners, right after the Jay Bruce trade, suffered a couple of key injuries to outfielders. If that trade happens a day later, the Phillies are forced to eat a lot more of Jay Bruce's salary and might have to give up a better prospect than what they did. As it is, they gave up somebody who profiles to be maybe a utility infielder at the major league level. The Mariners said they're considering of trying to convert the prospect into being a catcher. I mean, that's okay. And the Phillies are only paying $3.5 million of Jay Bruce's salary. He has already affected 4 or 5 wins with his presence. I mean, both offensively and defensively, he's been remarkable in the outfield with his range and with his ability to make some diving catches here and there. He's always had a really good arm, but he's now covering some good ground out there in left field and providing value defensively, and of course smoking the ball, home runs left and right for Jay Bruce. I mean, he and Scott Kingery are carrying the team right now. Coming into the game on Wednesday, Jay Bruce, as a Philly, was hitting .379, .400, .966. That's a .1366 OPS, 5 home runs and 13 RBIs in 8 games with the Phillies. And now, obviously, some of those numbers came down a little bit. He went 0 for 3 in the game against the Diamondbacks on Wednesday. But still, Jay Bruce has been nothing short of a miracle for the Phillies here over the last couple of weeks, really kind of helping stem the loss of Odubel Herrera and Andrew McCutchen and some of the less impactful play from Bryce Harper that we were hoping to see. And some help is on the way injury-wise. As I mentioned, Quinn is on a rehab assignment in Clearwater, but the thing thinking is that he will be called up this weekend in Atlanta. Edubre Ramos was activated in time for the finale against the Diamondbacks. He did not get into the game, but the Phillies have one of their bullpen pieces back as Austin Davis was sent down to AAA. Tommy Hunter is in Clearwater working his way back. The team says Pat Nashak could be close to returning, and maybe this weekend for Nashak as well. Adam Morgan and the Phillies are aiming for late next week for his return, and we're hearing that David Robertson has begun his throwing program again, and so far no setbacks there, so would really be nice if we can get him back after the All-Star game. But it does look like the bullpen is starting to get some reinforcements, and Roman Quinn, you know, he's no longer switch hitting, Roman Quinn, by the way. He's now exclusively a right-handed hitter. I think he's doing that to try and mitigate against some of the struggles he's had at the major league level hitting the ball, thinking that if he just focuses on being a right-handed hitter. Shane Victorino did that at the end of his career in Boston, becoming just a right-handed hitter, and it worked out well for him there. So Roman Quinn trying to do the same thing. But it's nice to see relievers are actually able to come off the injured list instead of just going on it. I mean, I didn't know that was possible. I didn't know you could do both ways. So I think that's pretty phenomenal. So it's good to see that the Phillies are getting some reinforcements just in time for a big series coming up against the Atlanta Braves, which we'll get into here in just a few minutes. But up next, I'm going to talk to Hannah Kaiser, MLB writer for Yahoo Sports. We're going to talk about the Phillies, the National League East, and the NL as a whole, and a little bit of trade deadline stuff as well. That's up next, right here on Hittin' Season. And joining me to talk a little bit about the Phillies, the National League East, and the National League as a whole is Hannah Kaiser, MLB writer for Yahoo Sports. You can follow her on Twitter at Hannah R. Kaiser. She's got a terrific video series. If you haven't checked it out, it's called The Bandwagon, and she's also one of the hosts for Yahoo Sports Podcast, the Yahoo Sports MLB podcast, uniquely named. Hannah, welcome to Hittin' Season. How are you?
You're making me feel like we should rename our podcast something more exciting.
No, I didn't mean it that way. Listen, it's all about search function, right? I mean, if you go to Apple Podcasts, Yahoo MLB Podcast, that's pretty easy, right?
We do talk about this every week, actually, that we should give it like a pithier name. Like, I'm pulling for spitballing. That's what I was. It's got like a funny sort of, so don't steal that if you're listening.
Yeah, seriously, get your own idea. Well, listen, first tell everybody about The Bandwagon, the video series that you do. It was really entertaining. I watched one you did on the Marlins today, and man, that is a tough sell. I gotta be honest, but for folks who haven't seen it, what is The Bandwagon?
So it is my weekly video series that I do at Yahoo, and it's based around the conceit that I am a totally shameless bandwagon fan. This is sort of contrary. There are some reporters who claim to be not fans of anyone, and I take the entirely opposite approach. I'm a fan of everyone. I love buying into a new team all the time. I think I need that to watch baseball. And so the premise of the show is every week I tell you who you should be a fan of this week and what's fun about that particular team. And yeah, we like to say that it's possible to find something fun about every team, and the Marlins was a particularly tricky one, although I think we came up with a creative enough solution.
No, absolutely. But everybody, make sure you check it out. It's very, very well done. I like the studio audience participation in the background. It's a lot of fun. Again, check out The Bandwagon. It's on YouTube and on our Twitter feed at Hannah R. Kaiser. So let's talk some Phillies here, Hannah. And you know, they've led the East for pretty much the entire season. There was one day when the Mets jumped in front of them in the National League East, but they're currently in a battle with the Braves atop the division right now. The Mets and Nationals are still there, but it's kind of a two-team race at the moment. That could change, of course. Who do you think has the edge right now, though, as we're getting into June here? And don't let the fact that this is a Phillies podcast with devout Phillies listeners cloud your judgment in any way, shape, or form.
Well, I don't think they have to worry too much about the Mets, although I guess that could change. So, right, they're literally tied right now. The Braves have figured out which of their young arms are actually good. I'm going to give you a very annoying answer, which is that I hate making predictions, but hear me out. This is a particular one that I don't want to make a prediction on because I think both the Braves and the Phillies are going to be super active on the trade market like from now until the deadline. And so we don't really know what we're comparing at this point. We're in some ways comparing what their trade sort of salary, what they have going for them on the trade market. And in terms of that, I think the Braves probably have more pieces they can move. Mm-hmm. They have a lot of prospects. They have a lot of particularly. However, I think actually that the Braves' youth is going to make them a little bit less aggressive. I think just in part because of the personalities of the front offices and in part because the Braves have a longer window, that we're going to see the Phillies a little bit more active than the Braves. And so pushed to make an answer, to give you an answer, I think I would say the Phillies have an edge because they want to have the edge. I think the Braves are a great team. I just think that it's going to come down to what those moves are that they make. And I think the Phillies are going to make more aggressive moves, in part because the Braves have already made sort of their most aggressive move. They signed Keuchel, and that's going to be a big deal. I think I'm feeling good about the Phillies, and I'm not pandering to your fans. I'm pandering to my family who lives in the Philly area.
Oh, okay. I'm sure your parents will tell you, we don't mind pandering. Tell us we're great. We you know, in Philadelphia, right. We are thirsty for that. No, no doubt about it. But, you know, I think you're right. And I think that the difference is, I mean, right now, I agree with you. I would right now trade rosters with the Braves if I were the Phillies. But that being said, I think the rosters are going to look a little different. If the Braves are willing to trade some of their high-end guys, they could go out and get whoever they want. The Phillies farm system is not as robust as Atlanta's, and they have like two or three guys that I think Phillies fans really feel good about, but I don't really want to trade those guys just yet. You know, they have a guy who's Alec Bohm, who's one of their top prospects, could be their starting third baseman next year if they don't go out and try and hit it big with Rendon or something like that. And so I think a guy like Zach Greinke makes a lot more sense for them if they want that big starting pitching upgrade, because they can just tell Arizona, listen, we'll eat so much of the salary and give you less in terms of prospect costs. That to me feels like if they're going to go after a big time starting pitcher, that would be the one to target, because Mike Minor, if the Rangers decide to sell Madison Bumgarner, I think a lot of those guys the cost is going to be prohibitive to the Phillies in terms of prospects. What do you think?
No, I agree with you there. Right. I think the in terms of comparing the Phillies and the Braves again, right, the Braves tied up a lot of their money with Keuchel. What they have is prospects, and the Phillies in a little bit of a flip situation. They have, they're willing to spend the money we've seen, and they have less to move in terms of prospects. And so I agree with you completely. You know exactly what you're talking about.
Okay. Well, Gabe Kapler is always a big topic of conversation among Phillies fans, and really among sports talk radio in Philadelphia. But, I mean, he's obviously a polarizing figure. He says some things that aren't said the way most Philadelphians like to hear things said. He's a very team-friendly guy, player-friendly guy, rah-rah guy, and that kind of rubs Philadelphians the wrong way. I don't really care about any of that. I don't care about it very much anyway. What I care about is what he does on the field. And, you know, from where I sit, he's dealt with an injury-riddled team and done a pretty good job with it, I think. I think he's doing a lot of things differently from last year, which we wanted him to do. And so I wonder, though, from an outsider's perspective, what people who don't watch this team every day, who aren't immersed in the minutiae of the Phillies, what people outside think of Gabe Kapler. So let me ask you, what do you think of the Phillies manager?
Well, so it's funny you say from an outside perspective, because I hear from a very inside perspective all the time. Reference that I'm from the Philly area. I'm on a family chat, like I think we all are at this point in our lives. It's right. My family hates Gabe Kapler, and I have to be honest. I thought I did too. Every game it's like, what is Gabe doing on the family text chat? And I very much internalized that going into this season. This is my first season covering baseball full-time at a national level. And I started the season in Philly, and I was actually with the team for a little while because I went from Philly to D.C. And I was totally, totally biased against Gabe Kapler coming in. That's completely my father's fault. I think he's actually doing a pretty good job. And now I'm like the one in the family text chat that's like, look, man, if you're in the clubhouse, the players love him. And you reference this. He's a real player-friendly guy. But I think that's great. I think it's working. I think particularly at the start of the season, I was talking to a lot of guys in the clubhouse around, like, you know, there's all these expectations. But at the same time, this team is made up of a lot of guys who haven't played together before. It's so many new faces in the clubhouse. And I talked to Reese Hoskins a little bit about this opening season. If your players love you and the people who call into sports talk radio hate you, then you're actually doing okay. that's the correct breakdown that a manager should have. I mean, we're not hearing about his bullpen moves, and you know, the less you hear about a manager's bullpen moves, the better he's doing. And I think he's getting out of his guys, and I think they are playing together well as a team. I mean, I think we're going to get to Jay Bruce, but even that, like, look, guys come in and then they perform, and that isn't a testament entirely to Gabe Kapler, but it's certainly, I believe that he is getting the best out of his players. And I think he's right to, you know, stand up for Gene Segura to the radio guys or whatever. I think, right. I think it's okay if the people calling in to the sports talk radio shows aren't happy with you. It's more important that your players are happy with you. And all the Phillies players that I've talked to seem to be, not just sort of, you know, of course they're going to say that they like him fine, but they seem to, like, even sort of unsolicited, bring up Gabe Kapler and credit his ability to really make the team gel really, really quickly. I mean, they've all sort of said, oh, no. I mean, by opening day, they were all telling me, look, we've been gelling since spring training. We put a lot of effort into doing things together as a team and you know, bonding dinners or whatever. And that all goes back to the manager. So,
yeah, I mean, I think
right. Philly still seems surprisingly mad at him, but
yeah.
But I don't really get it.
Yeah, I mean, there was a big interview from the WIP morning host this week or last week. It was the end of last week where, you know, they got into it about Gabe Kapler not admitting publicly that Gene Segura, his refusal or his inability to run out of the box indirectly caused Andrew McCutchen's knee injury. And, you know, you can't expect a manager to publicly blame an ACL tear on another member of the team. You want to lose a clubhouse. That's the way to do it. So even if you believe that as a manager, you can't publicly say it. And I think sometimes that's the issue is we expect Kapler to say things I don't think we would have expected other managers to say.
Yeah. And I think if he did say it, you'd have just as many people mad at him for that.
Yeah, so. Right. Exactly. Exactly. You mentioned Jay Bruce just a second ago. So he's the leading contender for National League MVP, correct?
Whatever. Player of the Week is a very silly award.
Yeah.
But I tweeted out a sentence from the email, the press release that MLB sent out about Jay Bruce winning Player of the Week. I think it was last week, just because it was such a funny juxtaposition that Bruce earned his sixth career NL Player of the Week award, his first since 2012, which, I mean, I am, every time I see that Jay Bruce is only 32, I am surprised.
It's shocking, isn't it? Yeah.
It feels like it's like a renaissance, like, or a resurgence of Jay Bruce, and he's only 32. Look, he's doing great, but I think unless, you know, with Cody Bellinger still alive and kicking. I don't think Christian Yelich has a shot at MVP.
I guess. But, all right, you know, but of all of the baseball players in the National League, he was the best last week. So let's all hang our hats.
He was the best last week.
Exactly. Let's talk a little Bryce Harper. He's had a very weird season here, Hannah. He's ninth among National League outfielders in wins above replacement, looking at Fangraphs numbers, but he only has 11 home runs on the season. There are 29 National League players with more home runs than Bryce Harper entering play on Wednesday night. He has an OPS plus of 114. He's striking out 30% of the time, but he does have a .357 on base percentage. He's played much better than expected defense in right field. He's been with the exception of getting thrown out trying to steal home in the series opener against Arizona, which was mind-bogglingly. Oh no, it was in the series finale against
That's
Cincinnati.
A weird play.
Very,
That's
very
a weird,
weird play. But his base running has largely been a plus. What do you make of his season so far? Because I can't put a label on it just yet.
Yeah, I make a lot of Bryce Harper's season. The joke when I started here, actually, was my friends used to tell people, this is my friend Hannah Kaiser, and she covers Bryce Harper for Yahoo Sports. I think that, like, three of my first six articles were about
him. Oh, man.
He's fascinating and confounding. So you mentioned his defense, and, I mean, to explain the WAR situation, a lot of it has to do with his defense.
Yeah.
Last year, he cost the Nationals something like 7 runs in right field, according to Fangraphs Advanced Metrics with their fielding. This year, he has already saved the Phillies 7 runs.
Wow.
He is better defensively. I think that's good. I think, you know, he probably was saving himself a little bit last year and not going all out all the time. And the numbers are showing that probably he is playing his hardest now, and that's the Bryce Harper everybody loves to see. And so with Bryce Harper, you always get into a conversation about, like, how is he more famous than he is good? So you brought up the WAR numbers, ninth among NL outfielders in WAR. And I thought that was interesting, so I went back and wanted to see sort of how that exact, you know, NL outfielders, how he stacked up in previous years. He was 14th for NL outfielders in WAR in 2016. He was 11th for NL outfielders in WAR in 2018. He was first, obviously, back in 2015 when he won the MVP.
Yep.
Skipped 2017 because he was injured. But yeah, I mean, I think that's about where he is. He's about ninth in NL outfielders in overall performance. He's just a really famous guy. And I think, so is it, you know, Bryce Harper's inconsistent. He's had big moments at the correct moment so far this year. And his jersey is selling like crazy. When you go to Phillies games, you see a lot of Bryce Harper, number 34. And I think he's never going to be 2015 Bryce Harper again. And so you hope he gets hot at the right time. But as long as he is, this is a weird, you know, this is like a little bit of an existential baseball comment, which is,
what's I love it.
Job as player,
yeah.
Is it to be really good or is it to be the kind of guy you want to see? And Bryce Harper is, the Phillies are, well, they were until today. Now they're tied, or until yesterday. Mm-hmm. The Phillies are in first or tied for first, and fans are showing up to see Bryce Harper. So I think Bryce Harper is doing his job. He is energizing the fan base, and the team is playing well enough. So I think you just got to hope he gets hot at the right moment going forward. But I agree, it's a little bit of a weird season.
Are you surprised he isn't among the top nine outfielders in the All-Star voting? I would have thought, given all the jerseys that he sold and all of the hype that he came into the season with, that just people by default would have voted for him as one of the three outfielders. But, you know, maybe his struggles have also, when I say struggles, you know, I put that in quotes too, because he's not having a bad season. It's a fine season, but that's kind of all it is. And, you know, I guess some of the national media has also just been following Bryce Harper a little bit more closely, and maybe there's just more public awareness of his quote-unquote fine season this year.
I think in terms of the All-Star voting, look, I mean, Cody Bellinger and Christian Yelich are the only players in either league right now, I think, to have more than 1 million votes.
Yeah.
They both happen to be National League outfielders. So
that's two of the three.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Across the board in terms of All-Star, I think what you are seeing is actually a testament. I'm coming off as very positive, but what you are seeing is a testament to the Phillies' depth. I think they are better all around the diamond than a lot of teams, but they really don't have any guys who are like, I mean, you know,
that
do I think
superstar type player?
Yeah, I mean the one that caught me off guard was catcher. So right now Realmuto is in third.
Mm-hmm.
I think he should be an All-Star. I think it's, you know, Wilson Contreras is having a great season, but no player holds a larger lead at any position in either league than Wilson Contreras, and that doesn't feel fair to J.D. Realmuto. I feel like that's on the Phillies fans. You guys got to vote for
Step up.
He is definitely as good as, if not better, Wilson Contreras.
Last thing for you, Hannah, if you're looking at the whole National League, obviously the Phillies went into Los Angeles and they were outclassed against the Dodgers. The Dodgers are by far the best team in the National League. They might be the best team in Major League Baseball, although the Twins and the Astros and a couple other teams that probably would like to have a conversation about that at the very least. But putting the Dodgers aside and looking at the rest of the National League landscape, there's a lot of teams with records very much like the Phillies who have had ups and downs, winning streaks, losing streaks. No team has gone on an extended winning streak, really. Where do you have the Phillies right now overall in the National League?
Well, you sort of took what I was going to say, which is that I do that all the time.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
It's the Dodgers and then it's everybody else. And I think there's no reason the Phillies, you know, couldn't hang with whoever is in that second tier and on any given day be at the top of that tier. I think, you know, this came up in just now when we were talking about All-Star, right? I think you look at the All-Star voting and you say, well, wow, none of the other guys are leading the All-Star voting, but they have guys who are up for All-Star voting all over the place. I mean, they are like a well-rounded team, and they are playing like one, and they're getting through some tough times. I mean, you know, obviously Babe Ruth is not going to be player of the week every week, but Andrew McCutchen goes down, they bring in Jay Bruce, and he right away wins NL player of the week.
Right,
I know.
It's
like even when you think that you can doubt them, you kind of can't. And I think I would put, you know, right, Dodgers are in a class of their own. And then depending on what day you're checking the standings and who's playing whom, I think the Phillies are right there in that sort of second class.
Well, folks, make sure you check out all of Hannah's great work at Yahoo Sports. Make sure to watch her video series, The Bandwagon. Make sure to subscribe to the Yahoo Sports MLB podcast. Hannah Kaiser, again, follow her on Twitter at Hannah R. Kaiser. Hannah, thanks so much for coming on Hittin' Season. I appreciate it.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
Well, up next, we'll take you around the majors and preview this big upcoming series against the Atlanta Braves. That's up next right here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season, so let's go around the majors here just real quick. I wanted to point out this tweet that somebody named John Larwa sent me on Twitter, at JLarwa26. It was an excellent idea for a potential starter to add, and I didn't think of it until he mentioned it, and so I didn't think of it at all. He mentioned it, and now I'm talking to you about it. He mentioned Cincinnati Reds starter Alex Wood, who is working his way back from back spasms. He is an effective left-handed pitcher when healthy. And because he's missed most of the season, I would think he would come relatively cheap. I don't think the Phillies should go all in for a pitcher like Madison Bumgarner. I think the price for Mike Minor is going to cost you Alec Boehm. I'm not willing to pay that for Mike Minor. I'm not really willing to pay that for Robbie Ray either. I don't want to give up Adam Haseley for any of those guys. I don't want to give up Spencer Howard for any of those guys. So that means they're probably going to have to go get something else. And if you're looking for a left-handed starter, I think Alex Wood could very much fit the bill. Over the years, he has been a very effective left-handed pitcher. In 2014 with the Braves, he went 11-11 in 24 starts, 35 games, 171 innings with a 2.78 ERA, 3.25 FIP. In 2015, he made 32 starts, 189 innings with a 3.84 ERA and a 3.69 FIP. In 2016 for the Dodgers, in an injury-shortened season, just 60 innings pitched that year, but a 3.73 ERA with a 3.18 FIP. In 2017 with the Dodgers, he went 16-3 in 25 starts, 27 games pitched, 152 innings, 2.72 ERA with a 3.32 FIP. Last year for the Dodgers, in 27 starts, 33 games, he went 9-7 in 151 and two-thirds innings with a 3.68 ERA and a 3.53 FIP. This is a guy who is steady. You know what you're going to get from a healthy Alex Wood. The question is, would he be healthy? If the Phillies feel like he could be healthy, then he is absolutely a guy that I don't think would break the bank, but would help you, would give you that left-handed starter that would help you against teams with really good left-handed lineups, like the Dodgers. But, I mean, there are teams with a lot of good left-handed hitters in there, and the Phillies just have needed a left-handed starter for a long time. And if Alex Wood comes back from back spasms, he's throwing off a mound again. It looks like he's making his way back. Don't know exactly how long it'll be before he's ready to come back. But if he's back and is able to make like a start or two before the trade deadline, that's a target. That is a target that I would look at because I think Wood is an excellent starter and gives you that look from the left side that the Phillies currently don't offer at the moment. Ken Giles has hit the disabled list. The Toronto Blue Jays closer was a guy that I think a lot of people thought the Phillies might have interest in if they wanted to shore up the bullpen, but he's on the disabled list now with some elbow issues, and so any thoughts about going after him in a trade for me would likely be out the window. I don't feel comfortable trading for a relief pitcher that's got elbow issues. There are some other options out there, so I think you could cross Ken Giles off your list. Of all the high-end starting pitching targets, to me, Zach Greinke makes the most sense. And I mentioned this to Hannah just a minute ago, but when you look at Greinke's numbers, he's going to go to the Hall of Fame, guys. Zach Greinke is going to be in Cooperstown. 7-2 as a 35-year-old this year with a 2.87 ERA, 82 strikeouts in 87 and two-thirds innings pitched, 1.4 walks per nine. He's got that command, baby, like Zach Eflin did tonight. He doesn't walk guys. He's stingy. He knows how to pitch. But he has a big, big contract attached to him. He is signed for $35 million in 2020 and 2021, and if whatever team trades for him, if the Diamondbacks make him available, we'll have to pay him the prorated amount, whatever's left on his $34.5 million that he's owed this year. So if the Phillies get him midway through the season, I mean, you're looking at $17 million you're going to have to pay him. And the Phillies, I believe, are enough under the luxury tax to handle that without going over the tax, but it's close. And so what the Phillies can hopefully have happen is have the Diamondbacks pick up $5 to $7 million of that salary. The Phillies will eat the rest of it moving forward, or at least $5 to $7 million a season for each of the remaining three seasons on the deal. The Phillies give up a couple of prospects, but none of their top guys. I mean, maybe you give up Adonis Medina and you take on, you know, you take on, you know, $20 million of the $35 million a year, or 25 of the $35 million a year, something like that. And you can get a top flight starting pitcher who costs a ton for a team that probably doesn't want to be on the hook for that salary anymore. That, to me, is the way you get a really good starting pitcher in here, is you focus on Zach Greinke and you use the fact that you have money. The Phillies have that money. They don't have a ton of prospects. That's how you get a quality starting pitcher in here, is go use the purse. Convince Arizona to give you their super high price guy, because Arizona's not beating the Dodgers, and they're probably not getting into the wild card. They do have a really good offense, so maybe they're not going to sell. But if I'm looking at the two starters, would I love Robbie Ray? Yes, I would like to have Robbie Ray on my team, but at what cost? I think Zach Greinke will actually cost you less in terms of prospects and more in terms of money, and I think that's the playground the Phillies should be playing in right now. All right, let's talk about this Atlanta Braves series here. Atlanta is red hot again. As I'm recording this, they are in a rain delay against the Pittsburgh Pirates in their series finale in a game that's tied at 6 apiece. So as I'm recording this, I do not know if the Braves have won that game, but you'll know by the time you hear this podcast whether or not that's the case, whether or not they have a 7-game winning streak, or whether or not the Phillies and Braves are still tied atop the National League East. But the Braves are playing great, great baseball right now. They have won 20 of their last 29 ball games, with the Wednesday night game not included. So again, if they beat the Pirates, it's 21 out of 30. The Phillies game against the Diamondbacks was the final game of a 35-game stretch against non-division opponents. They now go to Atlanta, and their next 26 games will be against teams all from their division, the National League East. Now, the Phillies went 19-16 against all those non-divisional opponents, 3 games over .500, but they'll have to do a little bit better, probably, against the National League East. And half of these 26 games, 13 games, are going to be against the Nationals and the Atlanta Braves. So this is the time. If the Phillies can decide to get hot here, they can put some serious distance between themselves. That being said, if the Phillies decide that now is the time to go through a June swoon, they could end up in real trouble. They could be in real trouble moving forward. They can't afford to go into a slump here. They need to be on their A game. They need to have as many guys going as possible. Luckily, they're starting to get healthier now. They're going to need production. They're going to need Bryce Harper to step it up a little bit more. They're going to need some of these guys to step it up a little bit more. A little bit more consistency. They've got to figure out a way to get Michael Franco out of the lineup. Cesar Hernandez has got to get going. Gene Segura has not been the impact player these last 2 or 3 weeks that he had been throughout the first month and a half of the season. Gene Segura needs to get back on track. The top of the Phillies lineup is not setting the table right now. Bryce Harper, as I mentioned, you heard the numbers. He's got decent numbers lately. He's just not jacking the ball out of the park. So Bryce Harper's doing what he needs to do. Rhys Hoskins is doing okay. Would like to see more home run power from those guys and JT Realmuto. But the 3-4-5 guys aren't the big, big problems in this lineup. It's 1-2 and then, you know, 7-8. The very top and the very bottom of the lineup are killing the Phillies right now, and that's what they need to shore up. The starting pitching needs to be more consistent, and the relief pitching, I think it's done as well as it can do. Hopefully getting some guys back will help turn that into a strength like we all expected it to be at the start of the season. But the Phillies, this is crunch time, and this series against the Atlanta Braves this weekend is a huge series, a monster series, one of many that they will play here over the next few weeks. On Friday night, it'll be Nick Pivetta, who has looked great since coming back from AAA, against a very, very tough left-handed rookie named Max Fried. The Phillies struggle against left-handed starters. This is a game they may not score a whole lot of runs. This is a game Nick Pivetta needs to match Fried pitch for pitch. Pivetta has confidence oozing right now, coming off a complete game, and then also a terrific game against the Dodgers. He is humming on all cylinders right now, so they've got Nick Pivetta going at the right time, but Max Fried is going to be a very tough challenge for this baseball team. Fried with a 3.75 ERA for the Braves so far this year. On Saturday night, it'll be Aaron Nola against Sean Newcomb. Again, another left-handed starter for the Braves, although Newcomb has, I think, is just coming off the disabled list here, so maybe they'll be catching Newcomb at a good time. Aaron Nola had a bad outing his last time out. Before that, he had had five or six outings in a row where he was very good, so we're just not sure which Aaron Nola we're going to see right now. Nola with a 4.58 ERA. There's just no knowing which Aaron Nola is going to show up on Saturday night. And then on Sunday afternoon, still not sure what the Phillies are going to do. That would have been Jared Eichhoff's spot in the rotation. There is some conversation that Eniel De Los Santos could get the start. That would be my pick. It would be his normal turn in the rotation. I would go with Eniel De Los Santos as the starter and have some bullpen guys ready to back him up. They could go with Cole Irvin. They could go with Ranger Suarez. There's also been talk about the Phillies going with a bullpen game or the opener or something like that. So the Phillies still not decided on what they're going to do on Sunday. For me, I wouldn't overthink this one. You're not going to get a huge advantage by going with the opener and trying to turn the Braves lineup around. They have a mixture of lefties and righties. The opener is used for a team that's got a lot of left-handers or a lot of right-handers, and you want to throw them off early in the game and get them to start a different lineup than they ordinarily would. I don't think you're going to see that with the Braves. So the Phillies could probably just go to a bullpen game. Maybe they go an opener where they have somebody pitch the first two innings and then you bring in Jared Eichhoff to pitch three or four innings out of the bullpen. That could be the way they go. They could do Jose Alvarez or something like that in the first inning or two and then go with Jared Eichhoff in innings 3, 4, 5, whatever it happens to be. That would not be the way I would do it. I would just bring up Eniel De Los Santos and see what the kid can give you. See what the young man can do against the Atlanta Braves, against Mike Foltynewicz, who absolutely owned the Phillies in 2018. This would be hilarious if it was happening to somebody else. In six starts against the Phillies last year, he went 3-1 with a 2.04 ERA. He struck out 40 batters in 35 and a third innings. Walked 12 Phillies hitters. Phillies hitters, they had a slash line against Foltynewicz last year of 175, 254, 308 with a 562 OPS. I mean, Foltynewicz just owned the Phillies last year. So, again, this is a series where the Phillies could be in some real trouble. The Atlanta Braves, as I said to Hannah, and I said this on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, I would trade rosters with the Atlanta Braves right now. I think right now, as these teams currently exist, I think the Braves have the better team. Because when you look at what the Phillies have, they don't have the superstar. Bryce Harper's not a superstar, not putting up superstar production. He's putting up the production of a good player. Rhys Hoskins is putting up the production of a good player, but they're not consistent. It's up and down. Ronald Acuna Jr. is a superstar. Freddie Freeman is a superstar. That's two superstar players you have right off the bat. And then you've got solid role players like Ozzie Albies, and Nick Markakis is still doing it. I mean, you've got a good young starting rotation. I think the Braves rotation, I would rather have the Braves rotation right now, I think, than the Phillies rotation, even without Dallas Keuchel in it. Mike Foltynewicz is struggling this year. I'm not sure what that's all about because he was extremely good last year for the Atlanta Braves, but 6.02 ERA for Foltynewicz. I know he was dealing with some injury issues as well. But he's generally speaking a very good starting pitcher. Max Fried has become a very good pitcher, and Mike Soroka and Julio Teheran, who the Phillies will not be facing this weekend in Atlanta, have been very good. And they have Dallas Keuchel, who's going to be joining the team probably not this weekend, but for the Braves series against the Washington Nationals not long after that. So I think they're expecting to have him in the next week and a half or so. As these teams sit right now, yeah, I probably would rather take the Braves roster at the moment. Now, that's I say all that to say, still a lot of ways the Phillies can remake their team, a lot of ways the Phillies can add some more talent to this roster, and the Braves might just stand pat from here on out. So still a lot of baseball left to be played, still a lot of general managing left to do here as both these teams battle each other atop the National League East. All right, folks, let's wrap up with our stat of the week. And I mentioned earlier that Zach Eflin deserves to be a Phillies All-Star representative. Perhaps the only other player other than JT Realmuto who also deserves recognition is Hector Neris. And one could argue that the Phillies do not need to go after a closer. they have a closer, and his name is Hector Neris. I still think the Phillies should go out and get a bullpen piece, another reliable bullpen piece for the back of the pen. But if you're talking about closer, it might be time to start believing in Hector Neris. Over the last 2 years, Neris has gone 45 for 48 in save opportunities with a 1.84 ERA in save situations. That's dating back to June 28th of 2017 to today. 45 for 48 in save opportunities with a 1.84 ERA. Hector Neris has been better than anyone probably expected this season. He's been extremely reliable, and maybe at some point I'll stop feeling nervous when Hector Neris enters a game in the ninth inning, but he has been absolutely lights out for the Phillies and is deserving of an all-star nod. Folks, that'll do it for this episode of Hittin' Season. My thanks to Hannah Kaiser for coming on Hittin' Season for the first time. Looking forward to having her back again in the future. And a reminder, kids, just to go check out that Hittin' Season Patreon for all the bonus content we got there. Go to patreon.com/hittin'season and don't forget to subscribe to the podcast feed. Leave a 5-star rating if you're at Apple Podcast and you wouldn't mind doing that. Would appreciate that. Be sure to check out Continued Success. They should have an episode out later this week. And be sure to check out the latest The Dirty Inning podcast, which, again, is just absolutely fantastic. Justin and Trev do an amazing job with that show. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you all next time right here on Hittin' Season.